What is a peak moment in life? Many people think it's when you finally get what you think you want. That's a peak moment in life. Most people you'll find, they don't understand what they need. But because you have to feel like you need something, they come up with imaginary needs, just so you can fit in with everyone else. You have needs, I have needs, let's all need, let's all have desires. And sometimes you actually get what you want in this world. That's quite an achievement, when you actually get what you want. But then what happens? You inevitably find out that what you wanted and what you finally got doesn't satisfy you. Very few persons have the conviction and forthrightness to stand up and face that reality. That although it's so difficult to get what I want, even when I finally get it, it doesn't satisfy me. This is what we call a defining moment for those who are able to become Krishna conscious. If we can have the confidence and clarity to look at life and see what's actually happening. Life means I'm full of desires. Unless you're a dead stone, you're always going to have desires. So Krishna teaches us in Bhagavad Gita that according to your desire, you get a certain status in life. Desire is activity in a very subtle form. Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita that just like the fragrance of a flower is something very subtle, but still it exists. Similarly, desire is a subtle presence of activity. And therefore, you can understand the whole universe based on desires and how they're happening. Desires within you, desires within other people. Just look at the playing field of desire, shall we say, and you can understand how life is really going on. You see, in order for people to struggle through existence, play and work, they have to have some desires. Now, in Krishna consciousness, we like to analyze those desires very carefully, because according to your desires, that's going to lead you into various places. Now, a Krishna conscious person wants the type of desires that lead to the best places. You can't stop desiring. This is a very important point that Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita. You're always going to be active with desire because you are spirit soul. That you are spirit soul means you're full of desire. But the problem is, when the spirit soul expresses itself through coverings of matter, then all kinds of problems happen. Now, let's try to understand this because it's very interesting. And if we can grasp this point, we'll see where so much frustration in life comes from. You've got this sense or feeling that you can be always happy. Or at least you feel like you deserve to be always happy. It just doesn't happen. But still, within you, you've got this feeling that there should be something like happiness without end. But when you try to achieve that with a material body within the material world, there are always problems. You just can't seem to get your hands on full happiness that comes to you without problems. So what is going on? Why does this kind of distorted situation come about? It's because the spirit soul is within a body of matter. The spirit soul has eternal desires, but when those eternal desires of the spirit soul express themselves through matter, then there are problems. Because matter means a beginning and an end. Everything in material nature has a beginning and end. But our desires are coming from the spirit soul, which has no beginning and end. So you can see the incompatible situation of material existence. On the one hand, you are the spirit soul. Krishna will teach you that in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. And on the other hand, you are wrapped up in a temporary body of matter. So, when you, the spirit soul, identify with your temporary covering, then there are so many problems in life. Krishna consciousness means to once again get you to identify with yourself as spirit soul. Not only as spirit soul, but also as part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Just like we can desire as individual souls, similarly the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is full of desires. But there's a big difference. Because Krishna is unlimited, he never fails with his desires. Krishna has not one slight bit of a problem in fulfilling his desires. That is what it means to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, people think God is the creator, God is the destroyer, or God is the maintainer, he gives the daily bread. But who thinks that God is expert at fulfilling desires? Once you understand desire as the most powerful thing in existence, then you can get a grip on your life. I know sometimes you wonder, well, I'm breathing, and I'm eating, and I'm sleeping, and I'm working, and I'm trying to be happy, and I'm making money, and I'm spending money, and what is my life really about? I'm going to school, I'm going to work, I'm going to play. Still, what is my life really about? Bhagavad Gita will teach you that your life is really about desire. When you have a material body, you're full of desires. Now, how did you get these desires? Because you are spirit soul, naturally you have the ability to desire. But when we forget our spiritual identity, we then become overwhelmed with desires that are caught up with our material body. In other words, we don't know how to desire properly. We think, I am this body, I am this mind, and I should fulfill the desires of my body and mind. For that wonderful privilege of fulfilling the desires of the body and mind, we have to struggle very hard. And it is a fact that everywhere life is a struggle. Material existence means that. Whether you're living in this part of the world or that part of the world, even in California, if you look at your life, you'll find there's a struggle. How can that be? The things you want just don't fall into your hands as you'd like them to. They just don't work out the way you want them to work out. That means struggle. It's not that you can just sit around and everything just happens as you like it. If you could do that, then you could say life is not a struggle. But as long as you have to endeavor to shape the course of events in your life, to shape the world around you, to adjust your relations with others, that means struggle. Now, Krishna is also a person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything emanates from Krishna. Krishna never has to struggle. He is equipped with unlimited energies for giving him whatever he wants. This is what it actually means to be successful in fulfilling desires. That you don't have to exert yourself in any kind of way. Everything just presents itself to you. Only Krishna can do that, because everything is Krishna's energy. So, if we're actually going to deal with our ability to desire, we have to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality, Godhead. You see, actually, we are attracted to desire. Everyone here knows what it's like to be full of desire, especially when you think you've got a good chance to fulfill those desires. It's kind of a nice feeling, isn't it? You think, yeah, I'm kind of alive with desire today. The things I'm desiring, I'm going to get. You really feel good about yourself when you feel you have a chance to get what you're desiring. And then what about the opposite? When you feel like there's no chance to get what you're desiring, then you're overwhelmed with hopelessness and depression. But as soon as you think you've got a chance to get what you desire, you perk up, you become alive again. So this shows you how desire and its fulfillment or frustration can make or break you. Now, if we're actually going to understand the complete picture in terms of desire, as we said, we must understand Krishna. When you see how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acts with desire, then you can become free from material existence. Krishna promises you that in Bhagavad Gita. He says, if you can know the transcendental mystery of why I appear in the material world and why I act in the material world, then when you give up the present material body, you won't take another material body. The whole course of instruction in Bhagavad Gita is to teach you how to desire in perfection. That means to link your desire with Krishna's desires. Krishna is the perfect desire. The way we get out of the trap of temporary, frustrated desires is to connect our desires to Krishna, because he is the expert at fulfilling all desires without any impediment whatsoever. So that brings us to one verse we'll discuss briefly tonight. This is the first verse of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. So I'll just quickly read the Sanskrit. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Sapta Mana Harta Yogam Yujan Marashraya Asamshayam Samagam Ma Yatha Gyasyasi Tashtranu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Britta, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Before we read a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's purport, let's just think about this very sacred ancient translation. The Supreme Lord is saying, now hear, because I'm going to teach you something. I'm going to give you a process or a method how you can become fully conscious of me, the Supreme Desiring Person. And through this process, by executing this process, your mind is going to become attached to me. It's very important. The mind attached to Lord Krishna. Because Lord Krishna is the unlimited expert at desire. If our mind attaches itself to Krishna, then our life becomes successful. In other words, you can look at it in the opposite way. Our problems in life are because our mind is unattached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does your mind do when it's unattached to Krishna? It becomes attached to temporary matter. Each individual here can take stock of his or her life and see what the mind is doing, what the mind's attached to. The mind becomes attached to physiology, different material bodies. It's amazing, you know, how deeply absorbed the mind is in meditating on material bodies. And then your mind becomes attached to thinking about other people's minds, other people's emotions. Your mind has to be absorbed in something. So Krishna consciousness doesn't mean empty the mind, make it just like a vacuum. That's actually impossible. I know a story. I know a Western born, he's from UK, from England, Buddhist teacher. He's actually a Buddhist preceptor in Thailand. He went to Thailand as a young man and performed his meditation in the jungles of Thailand. The particular meditation they do is to just focus upon the ingoing and outcoming breath, and that way detach yourself from all your feelings, detach yourself from all your desires, and finally you're at peace with yourself. Even though there's no teaching of what the self is, still you feel some peace because you're not so much engaged in pursuing the object of the senses. So he did this for many years. He would meditate in a hut in the jungle. He would meditate on the ingoing and outgoing breath, and incoming outgoing breath, and he would be, he started to become aware of so many things in his mind, different feelings, and different desires, and he could see the lust, the anger, the greed, he could see his material conditioning, because after all, he was practicing, severe austerities. So, then he became a famous, a preceptor, or he was in charge of a monastery, and many young people from England, Germany, they would come and learn how to do meditation from him, in which for 10 days they would be completely quiet and would sit for hours every day for 10 days and just focus on the ingoing and outgoing breath and try to get some experiences about themselves. So he was telling me one thing he couldn't figure out that just blew his mind. He had been meditating like this for 10 years in a little hut in the jungle, just not worried about the mosquitoes, through all kinds of disease. Every day he would just sit and focus on the ingoing breath, incoming breath, and the outgoing breath, and try to get realizations of the mind. And he was feeling like, I'm really making progress. I'm really detaching myself from desire. Soon I will be free from desire. Soon I'll be completely empty. Soon I will just lose myself into nothingness. And that'll be it. So he told me he was really feeling that he was making some significant progress. He was getting far away from the mentalities of normal material existence. So one night, in the evening, he was sitting in his hut in the jungle, meditating on the incoming breath and the outgoing breath, seeing himself as separate from the mind and extinguishing all desire, as he thought. And I don't know if you've ever been to India or any third world countries where, although there are remote villages, somebody's got a transistor radio. And they're very tinny radios, and they blare out this music, and it's very disturbing. So there he was in his hut meditating on the breath, separating himself from all his thinking, extinguishing all desires, a monk of 10 years, free. And then he said someone came by with a radio, and out from the radio came like this pop song from the 1950s. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. And he said, all of a sudden, tears started coming out of my eyes. All of a sudden, I was crying. I couldn't figure figure out why. Why am I responding like this to this sentimental song? Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. I'm a monk. I'm free from all, sentimentality. I've extinguished all desire. So he asked me, can you please explain this? And I told him the Krishna conscious conclusion from Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity has a natural desire to love, and you can't get rid of that. The living entity will always desire. So therefore, we have to find the perfect object of desire, the perfect object of love. We don't try to extinguish desire. We recognize reality. What is reality? That the living entity is eternally pleasure-seeking, the living entity is eternally seeking love. Therefore, yoga means to find the supreme object for pleasure and for love. That is Krishna, the unlimited reservoir of pleasure. In this way, I hope we can understand the importance of when Krishna is saying to Arjuna, now here, I'm going to teach you how you can practice the kind of yoga that will make you fully conscious of me. Your mind will be attached to me. See, Krishna, he's not asking for blind faith. He's telling you what to do, and then he's explaining the results of the process. I'll teach you the method, and here's the results. You will have a mind attached to me. You'll know me in full. You'll be free from doubt. Alright, let's hear a little bit from Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full of all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. Bhagavad Gita is teaching you that the perfection of all knowledge is to fix the mind upon Krishna. Your mind is always going to be jumping to one thing or another, but real yoga trains you so that your mind is always focused on what is most beneficial. What is the most beneficial thing we can focus on in life? That is the source of all love and pleasure, because we always want those things. In bhakti yoga, in Krishna consciousness, we don't deny this eternal, inherent, natural, psychological desire for pleasure and love. It's simply that we say, you can't fulfill those desires in a materialistic way. It's impossible. Those desires are meant to be focused on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is capable of fulfilling unlimited desires for love and pleasure. That is the value of focusing the mind on Krishna. But life in the material world means we're rebellious. We have so many other things to do except fix the mind on Krishna. If you think about it, you'll see that so. We have so many things to invest our mind in, to put our mental energy into. And we're surrounded by so many desires. And those desires frustrate us, embarrass us, delude us. You've all had that experience of desiring things, and those things turn out to be the worst thing for you. You've all had experience of hankering, oh, I want this, I want it, I want it, I want it. And then you even get it, and it's, oh, that wasn't any big deal. You all have that experience. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to do like this Buddhist monk and sit in a hut in the jungle for 10 years, meditating on the incoming and outgoing breath, and thinking you're going to extinguish all desires and make everything zero? No. You can't do that even if you wanted to. If you try, you'll find out that sooner or later, you'll be in the presence of some slight agitation, like an old pop song, "Tell Laura I love her, tell Laura I need her." And once again, the whole outpouring of desire will come upon you. Oh, I want to be loved, I want to love, I want pleasure, I want to give pleasure. You can't get rid of that. So bhakti yoga, the highest yoga, recognizes you can't get rid of that because it's actually the expression of the soul. Even when the soul is embedded in a material body, still, there's this desire coming out for pleasure and to love. So, real yoga means take those desires for pleasure and love and focus them upon the person who can actually handle those desires, and that is Krishna. Krishna is unlimitedly expert at handling desire. Krishna can accommodate unlimited desires. Krishna can give unlimited pleasure. And how does Krishna demonstrate his qualification for handling all your desires? Very easily. Because Krishna himself has not the slightest impediment or problem in fulfilling his own desires. Krishna has his unlimited energies for giving him whatever he wants. And Krishna never has to go outside of himself to fulfill his desires. Why? Because everything is Krishna's energy. Therefore, Krishna alone is self-sufficient in achieving his desires. Now, what happens when we try to enjoy? We always have to go outside of ourselves. And that's when we leave ourselves open to disappointment and defeat. We have to enter into unreliable situations. Of course, we cannot even rely upon ourselves. What to speak of going outside of ourselves to rely on other things for our satisfaction. But Krishna, Lord Krishna, demonstrates his ability to perfectly satisfy your desires by his own ability to satisfy his desires without any impediment. The Lord never goes outside of himself because everything is his. And he never meets any impediment to his desire. That is the definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that knowledge of Krishna is far beyond any understanding of God as the creator, as the controller or destroyer, or the white light, or the force, or the power that be, however you put it. Real yoga means to understand Krishna, and then we'll know what to do with our desires. Then we'll know what to do with our longings to be loved and give love and to have pleasure. So, we hope that many of you will seriously consider taking up this process of bhakti yoga and becoming masters of desire. Someone who's a master of desire knows how to fix the mind upon Krishna, attach the mind to Krishna in full consciousness. Full consciousness of Krishna means you're fully conscious of what pleasure and love actually is. So that's what's going on here in our Krishna conscious community in Dwarka, here on Watsika Avenue. By Srila Prabhupada's compassion, the full science on how to fix the mind on Krishna, the unlimited reservoir of pleasure, is made available to everyone. And we hope you take advantage. And in this way, your desires will meet their complete satisfaction. Not in anything material, but they'll meet complete satisfaction by connecting to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So, are there any questions? I can go on talking a long time, but you also have a wonderful feast to partake in. this banquet. Yes. Startled at first, but because in Buddhism there is no knowledge of the positive, therefore he really didn't know how to process it. You see, Lord Buddha taught that, he said, I come to teach two things and two things only. What is dukkha, misery, and how to become free from dukkha, misery. Now, Lord Buddha taught a very succinct gospel. Free yourself from desire. Free yourself from the false self. But Lord Buddha never taught what happens once you are free from illusion. Just like this term nirvana. What does it actually mean? It's a Sanskrit term. Nir means out of. Vana means forest. So when you're out of the forest of illusion, where are you? Buddha never taught that. So therefore, because he was a genuine Buddhist, this monk, he couldn't answer. He just kind of scratched his head and said, well, I better get back to my breathing exercises, my breathing meditation. What else could he do? Those who come to hear about Krishna are the most fortunate persons because they can actually learn how to deal with their desires. You can't deny them. You can't extinguish them. We teach you to connect them to Krishna. And in that way, your life gradually becomes perfect in love and pleasure. Any other questions? Yes? That's a very good question. Now, remember this verse that I was reading from Bhagavad Gita? Krishna saying, now here, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So Krishna is not saying in this verse, Arjuna, after you die, it's all going to happen for you. No, he's saying, right now, I'm going to teach you how you can do it. It can happen to you right now. Now, the amazing thing is, where is this instruction going on? Do you know anything about Bhagavad Gita? Okay. Bhagavad Gita is the main spiritual text of India, and it's spoken by Lord Krishna to his devotee Arjuna in the middle of two armies on a battlefield. So there you have like the epitome of a practical material situation. You know, sometimes people say, well, hey, it sounds very good what you guys are saying, but you know, I'm a working person, or I'm a student, or I have a family. I mean, how is what you're saying relating to real life? But Bhagavad Gita is real life. It's spoken on a battlefield in between two armies. That's the most pragmatic type of situation. Still, Krishna is telling Arjuna, now you listen. Even in this situation, I can impart to you knowledge so you'll be fully conscious of me. That's the wonder of Krishna consciousness. You see, everything actually belongs to Krishna. So yoga means to learn how to use all the things, even material things, for the pleasure of Krishna. And then these things become transformed from material to spiritual. That is real yoga. So we don't turn our backs on anything. We face things in the clarity of Krishna consciousness. This belongs to Krishna. How can this be used for Krishna's pleasure? Just like we can see you, but we don't deny you. Who is this person? What do you want? No, we look at you and think, this person belongs to Krishna. This person is part of Krishna. How can this person be happy connected to Krishna again? So it's all a question of vision, you see? And you don't have to wait until you die to have that vision. You can have that vision right now in the present material body that you have. So what do you think? Interesting. All right. Any other questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Your mind can get you into a lot of trouble, as many have found out. Your mind is full of so many impressions, not only from this life, but from many other lives before. So you've got this whirlwind going on inside your head, so to speak. And that whirlwind is full of so much debris from this life and preceding lives. And so this whirlwind kind of bewilders you because you identify with all this debris that's blowing around in your head, so to speak. And yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's what I want. Yes. I can see clearly. This is my desire. Or this is where I'm at. Or this is my thing. But it's just a whirlwind blowing debris around inside your head. And what makes it even worse is that as you go about your normal, innocent life, and of course everyone has a normal, innocent life, everyone is well-intentioned, most people feel, you know, I'm not a saint, I'm not a sinner, you know, I'm the right balance, you know, everyone feels that about their life. When you analyze your life separate from Krishna's vision, you can get this false sense of security about your life. But anyway, we don't talk too much about that now. So, as you lead your so-called innocent life, you're picking up more influences which add to the debris you already have whirling around in your mind. So you've got all these things blowing around inside, and you start pursuing them. And then you get into trouble. Because even though you may want something, you don't always get it. You have to have the ability to achieve these desires. It's not that just because you desire something, it automatically comes the way you want it. That's the point. It'll come, but not quite the way you want it. Just like everyone wants the best possible car, but it doesn't mean you're going to all get a Mercedes. There's other things happening called karma. So, you've got this mind that's just blowing here and there, and then we have to take into account your previous actions, how much merit you have to fulfill your material desires. So, in this way, your life becomes very complicated, and you can't understand what's going on. Okay, I'm desiring, but it's not working out. Or sometimes you don't desire and things come to you. And that really amazes you. So, you know, you go to the New Age bookshop and you buy lots of books, you know. Don't worry, it'll all happen. Or be one with the universe. Or the universe is automatically evolving towards perfection, so just be with it and you'll be going towards perfection. And, you know, you don't know where to turn, you know what I mean? It's like... And after a while, what do you finally say? The heck with it all, you know. I'm just going to satisfy my senses like everybody else. So it is a bewildering situation, as our temple president, Sovastrabhu, was pointing out. It's a very bewildering situation to get on top of all this stuff that's blowing around in your mind. You know, your mind is practically telling you, you want this, this is you, this is where you're at. My mind is telling me this. It must be true. So, how are you going to become free from all that? We need a practical process of purification. That is what Krishna consciousness is in its beginning phases. A total cleansing. And then you can begin to experience spiritual desire, which is far beyond the temporary debris blowing around in our minds, which we think, yeah, that's me, that's my desire, that's where I'm at, that's my thing, that's my inclination. Yes. Yes.
But
Right. Yes. If you're full of desire, and Krishna is full of unlimited desires, and also you have the unlimited ability to satisfy all your desires, then certainly you're undisturbed. Disturbance comes when you can't fulfill your desires. You get frustrated, you get angry. But Krishna never encounters an impediment in fulfilling his unlimited desires. Therefore, he's undisturbed, he's peaceful. And we become disturbed, we become frustrated because we can't fulfill our own desires. It's very embarrassing. Srila Prabhupada would often describe material life in that way. It's embarrassing. You've got all these desires and you get thwarted and impeded in trying to fulfill them. And no one likes to discuss this, you know? It's not something you like to talk about except maybe with a closest friend, because you don't want to let your guard down. Everyone likes to present themselves as, I'm getting over. I'm making it. I'm achieving. I'm fulfilling. I'm gratifying. That's the normal way people profile, you know? Yeah, my desires are all working out, you know? How about you? Anything else? Yeah. There cannot be any love between you and Krishna unless you have independence. Love means you're voluntarily entering into our loving relationship. So, in order to arrange for loving exchanges, Krishna awards you with independence, but it's very tiny. You can choose to love Krishna or not. Otherwise, how can the loving experience be true unless you can choose? Would you like, even let's just take a material example, material romance. How would you like to have an affair with someone who was forced to be with you? It wouldn't be very fulfilling, would it? How would you like, you're a married man now? Anyway, you understand me. Okay? How would you like to be with a young lady who says, I'm just with you because I'm forced to be with you? Would that enliven you? No. You want the young lady to say, I'm attracted to you because of your qualities, your activities, right? So, Krishna is the supreme lover. So, he awards his parts and parcels with independence so that they can maximize their loving affairs with him. You can't do away with that aspect of reality. You have the independence to choose, I'll love Krishna or not. When you misuse your independence, then you enter into material existence. Now, yoga means to learn how to properly use your independence again so you go back to the spiritual existence. That's what we mean by back to Godhead. Back to the source of all love and pleasure. Back to Krishna. So you can't complain to Krishna, why did you give us independence if you knew we were going to misuse it? Krishna sets the system up. Krishna is the supreme lover. He set up a system for maximum love. And part of that system is you get independence. Because Krishna doesn't want to be with persons who are forced to be with him. At the same time, though, Krishna is so attractive, you can't help but be attracted to Krishna when you're around him. But that's a deeper understanding. Anything else? Oh? That's explained in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, once you come back to me, you never return to the material world again. Once you wake up from the nightmare, you'll never want to have it again. You've been burned before. You've been burned once, that's enough. You've learned the hard way. I'm sure you've done things in which you say, okay, I'm never going to do that again, right? Oh, okay. So, material existence is, it's a bad dream. It's a nightmare, and you're not going to do it again. You don't have to learn the hard way. You can just stay with Krishna. But still, you have his independence, so some parts of Krishna misuse their independence. And you go into an imaginary state in which you think you're separate from Krishna. It's just a dream. Now, actually, even when you think that you're separate from Krishna, that's also Krishna, that consciousness. That's the amazing thing. So you never get away from Krishna. Even when you think there's no Krishna, that consciousness is also Krishna. But Krishna allows you to dream. Oh, it's all me, my life. I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to control. But that exuberance and that rebellion is based on Krishna's energy. He's letting you do that. And finally, you may wake up from this craziness and say, okay, let me find a better way of relating to Krishna than rebelling, trying to be the enjoyer and controller. Let me simply, voluntarily, I'll agree to participate with Krishna in exchanges of love, rather than trying to enjoy matter, temporary matter, trying to squeeze pleasure out of temporary matter. You ever take a dry towel and wring it trying to get water out of it?